So tonight, again, I'm so pleased we have Ari Galper is going to join us tonight, and Ari is the creator of Unlock the Game, a new sales mindset that overturns the notion of selling as we know it today. With a master's degree in instructional design and over a decade of experience creating breakthrough sales strategies for global companies such as UPS and Qualcomm, Ari discovered the missing link that people who sell have been seeking for years. His profound discovery of shifting one's mindset to a place of complete integrity based on new words and phrases grounded in sincerity have earned him the distinction as the world's leading authority on how to build trust in the world of selling. Ari, welcome to our call. I'm so happy to have you, brother.
Thanks. Appreciate being here and the invitation, and it's an honor. I appreciate it, Ken.
Well, you know, Ari, you and I have gone back for a while. I've had you come in and train some of our associates in our organization. I know you've worked with several of our associates. And, you know, really what you're doing is taking the world by storm because it's directly challenging the traditional selling. And you're getting – I personally have had tremendous results with your breakthrough strategies. So I'd kind of like to just get into this and ask you a little bit, you know, how did you come up with the Unlock the Game and this incredible program that you're teaching now everybody that has anything to do with selling? And that's basically everybody.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, let me give you a little bit of context here. I have a background in the development of training programs for some large corporations, Qualcomm and UPS, and have a master's in education training. So I spent a lot of time understanding the whole all the variables around sales training and all the programs out there, and I found a big hole in all of them. And it all stems from a story that I'll quickly tell, which people who know me already know this story, but for the rest of you, it might be new. About 3-4 years ago, I was involved with a company where I was actually selling myself, and I was on a live conference call with a potential client in New York, and it was the first call. I was leading the phone call. We were selling software via the Internet, so it was an Internet-based demonstration. And it was myself and the CEO in the room, and I was delivering the presentation over the phone on a conference call speakerphone to the clients back east in New York, a large company there. And the call went great. It was a one-hour call. They were asking me all the right kind of questions. How much does it work? How much does it cost? How long have you been in business for? How many clients do you have? And of course, I and my relaxed self answered all the questions. I was very well trained on the product, and a lot of chemistry on this call. It was almost like a love fest on the phone. You know, it just felt so right. There was so much chemistry in this call that I said to myself and my boss that this is going to be a deal that's going to happen. There's no doubt about it because they had all the right questions and I had all the right answers. So essentially, we decided to end the call after about an hour, and they ended the call by saying to me, Ari, we love what we see. Fantastic demonstration. Give us a call in 2 weeks. So I said, sounds good. I'll give you a call in 2 weeks to follow up with you. And so as we said our goodbyes, and I was reaching for the phone to turn the phone off, to push the speaker button off by accident, my finger hit the mute button instead. And they thought I hung up the phone. And for about 3 or 4 seconds, something inside of me decided to keep my finger back and not push the button off. And just for a second, listen in on what it's like to be on the client side of the phone or the prospect side of the phone. And so I sort of stepped in the dark side of the selling world, and I was able to listen in as these prospects kept talking, thinking I was gone. And I'll throw it out to you, Ken. Do you have any thoughts of what I may have heard?
Well, they're probably talking about you. I'm not sure.
That's for sure. It's actually hard to fathom what they could have said other than a couple of positive things or virtual things, but here's what they said verbatim. What they said was, we're not going to go with them, keep using them for more information, and make sure we're fully educated on his product so we can shop someplace else. It was a complete opposite of what they said to me for the hour call before, and that was such a state of shock at that moment that I realized. A profound realization came to me, and I realized that somewhere along the way, it has become socially acceptable not to tell the truth to people who sell. It's perfectly okay. And at that moment, I realized that there was a missing piece of selling, and that was trust, that no other sales trainer has ever taught people how to build trust in the selling environment, only on how to close a sale. So there's a missing component there that the does not allow us to get to the truth with the client. And therein lies the context behind the lost game.
Wow. Well, you know, we're speaking about trust. We're definitely probably at one of the lowest times in the history of selling in the business world for creating trust when you're out there buying a product or trying to purchase anything. You know, it's a tough place out there right now.
It is. It is.
You know, who do you trust? How do we trust them? You know.
Exactly. And that's the whole purpose of the Unlock the Game program, is to bring trust back in the selling process so that both people feel comfortable engaging in it. So the whole focus of today's call is to focus on what I've entitled 7 Secrets of Cold Calling that the sales gurus don't even know. And the focus of this call is not going to be on the end of the process of selling, which is the close. It's going to be on the beginning of the process of selling, which I believe is much more important than the close. And I believe if you do it right in the beginning, the sale will happen, if it's meant to be happening at the end, automatically on its own, without you having to push, cajole, or persuade. So to my knowledge, I haven't seen any other selling program that puts this much emphasis on the focus of trust early on in the process, but what I've come up with is a methodology to do it in a very natural way to help people take their fear away of actually making the calls. So what I'm going to do today is put a spotlight on the critical interaction of the cold call and why it's important to understand the dynamics that cause the call to succeed or fail within seconds. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense. I'm glad you're going to talk about cold calling, because I'll tell you what, you know, cold calling is probably most people's nightmare. I know that when I first started to cold call, man, that was something that was like pulling teeth for me, and I think it is for most people. I think a lot of people on this call, you mention the word cold calling, and they go like, next, I didn't even want to go there. You know, are you going to address some of that tonight?
I sure am. It's the most dreaded experience of all of selling. That's why people usually leave the selling world or spend all their time marketing and just don't sell. And the funny thing about selling is that it costs virtually nothing to make a phone call. And you can be very effective as long as you're not afraid of doing it. So I'm going to absolutely focus on that today and give people a step-by-step methodology to really break this down. And in fact, I have an analogy to help people understand what the goal of today is. You know how you might watch a sporting event on television? It might be baseball, football, or basketball, or for my friends in Australia, cricket, or anything else in terms of sporting events. You know how you watch an event happen and something happens so quickly you actually miss it. Even the judges miss it. They have to go back and watch that slow motion to break it down screen by screen to actually see if the ball hit the touchdown or not.
Right.
Well, that's the analogy today. We're going to take the scene by scene of the actual first 7 seconds of the call and break it down so everybody understands the point in which it fails or the point in which it'll succeed. So we're going to break it down step by step in slow motion so you can begin to take those components, put them into your world, and apply them right away. So that's the analogy behind all this today.
I'm anxious to hear about your 7 steps, so why don't you tell us about the first step and let's do it.
Yeah, okay, so everybody, hopefully you have a pen and piece of paper handy next to you. The first one is number one, which is change your mental objective before you make the call. What I'm suggesting here is that most people who pick up the phone and make a cold call, in their mind, they're already hoping to either make a sale or make an appointment. That's what their mindset is. And what's interesting is that people on the other side of the phone can pick that up. And what it does is it bypasses the whole process of you first having to focus your mind on building trust in a conversation. So I'm going to suggest that by you shifting your focus from thinking and hoping to make the sale on your call, what I'm suggesting today is instead of that, replace that with your mental focus being, I'm going to make this phone call right now to build a conversation, to engage in a level of trust in order to allow information to exchange back and forth, in order for me to determine if there's a fit or not here. So what I'm talking about here is changing the way you think before you even pick up the phone. And instead of hoping to make the sale or this appointment, which is bypassing the whole process of actually building trust, to stay focused on the first few elements, which is most important, which is actually building conversation. Because what happens is this, is that our words don't match our thinking. That's the problem. So people can pick up when your mind's someplace else and not focus on the conversation. Does that sort of make sense, Ken?
It makes sense, but I have to say, man, it goes against, the traditional selling model, right? I mean, traditional selling model is like you're thinking, you know, if the client walks in, you're thinking directly about selling that client. My outcome is to sell that client this X product, right? So it's totally mind shifted. I love it. It's the perfect way to do it.
The whole benefit of this is it takes the way the frenzy and working yourself up mentally for the call. And that's where all the rejection and the fear comes from. It becomes from us working up our expectations and hoping for an outcome when it's premature to even have that outcome ready in your mind. You see, so that's where the big mistake has been happening in traditional selling. We've been focused on the outcome and not put any emphasis or thoughts around the process necessary for the outcome. And the problem with that is if you're thinking in the wrong place, then the words you use will be a signal that will mask that thinking and will obviously cause the other person to shut you down in a few minutes of the call. So again, number one is change your mental objective before you make the call, from making the appointment of the sale to focusing on engaging in a conversation to build trust first to determine if you are fit with the other person or not.
Good. And just a quick question on the trust side.
Yeah.
So what, you may be getting to this later, but how do we build trust with a person?
Well, that's exactly what I'll be rolling into in a few minutes, because there's two components here. There's two components I'll be getting into. One is the way of thinking, because if you can't change your way of thinking, then your behavior will not change. So if I just emailed everybody a list of scripts and words to use, but the thinking was still back with the old thinking of focusing on the sale, there'd be a conflict, right?
That's
It wouldn't be genuine. So I must help you or help people first think differently, expand what they know now. Once their mind is open, then they'll be ready to plug into other language and it'll be much more natural and easier to use. So we'll roll this into it as I put this together. Number two is understand the mindset of the receiver of the call. Right? So number one was your way of thinking and how you're feeling on the call. Number two is understanding how the other person is receiving your call. And let's an example, Ken. I mean, for yourself, let's say you're in your office and you're working away and your phone rings. If someone calls you and says to you, "Hi, my name's Ari. I'm with XYZ Company. We offer a global solution for a company just like yours. Do you have a few minutes?" What goes through your mind?
I don't have any time for you right now, Ari. I've got some other projects on the back burner, and next. Next.
Right, so what happens is within seconds, you automatically put up what I call the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens at hello, doesn't it?
Right.
And that's how fast selling can end for people. It happens at the moment when you trigger the negative stereotype of the salesperson in the mind of the receiver simply by using your approach. So what's interesting is by me having a traditional introduction about myself, what I have to offer, and then try and engage you, it's basically too late to be able to build trust because you've already associated me with what?
Trying to sell me something.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And therein lies the problem. That's very important for everyone to understand how you're being received by using an approach that automatically debunks what you're saying. So it's going to be very important for us to begin to use an approach and language and thinking that basically empathizes with how the other person receives us on the phone.
And that's the interesting thing about that, Ari, is I can't tell you how many times I have, somebody's made a scripted call to me, and I'll immediately want to hang the phone up. And then, I'll listen for whatever reason out of courteousness, and all of a sudden I hear that, it's really something I like, but, several times I'll just say next anyway because of the approach.
Interesting.
Because it's being driven to me. It's like, they're trying to promote something to me. It's like, I don't want that.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about a common theme out there.
Yeah, I mean, everybody in this call, think about how many times you've been interested in buying something but didn't simply because of the approach of the person. And that's what I'm focusing on today. It's not about what you're selling. It's about how you're selling, which is a whole area that's been untapped for a long time in the world of selling. So number two is to really put yourself in the mindset of the receiver so you do not trigger what I call the walls that go up that creates the rejection and causes people to be fearful of making those calls. So that's sort of the mindset around that. Number three is determine a core problem that your solution solves. Okay? So what I'm talking about that is what I'm saying here is that we have all been taught and trained. When we begin to have a conversation with somebody new in a selling environment, we've been trained to begin the conversation talking about what? Talking about ourselves and our product and our solution, right? And so what we do and do, what we try and do is we try and have the first few seconds of the conversation talking about our solution. Then we close our eyes and sort of hope it connects to the person that we're talking to. And what I'm suggesting here is by you offering a pitch or your solution first, before first engaging somebody in a core problem they might be having, you yourself are creating a conflict by that approach. So it becomes an us versus them conflict in the conversation. Because studies have shown that people connect to problems first before they collect the solutions. I mean, you watch the nightly news on TV, what do you see first, the first 50 minutes of the hour?
All
right?
You
see problems, right? That's what sells. People connect to that. They're engaged in problems. What do you see the last 5 minutes of the news? Cutesy stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
About all the positive things. So what I'm trying to say here is people connect to other people that understand and articulate their problems well. So when the other person feels understood by you, then they are willing to talk to you and not put their defenses up. So what I'm suggesting here with this number three is that we have all got to be able to come up with two or three core problems that we believe our solution solves for the prospect on the phone or the client on the phone. And you cannot use generic business terms like increased costs or decreased costs or increased revenue, because that's too generic and not specific. You have to come up with a very specific problem. And so I'll give you an example to help us make it more real for everybody, okay? I offer an Olympic Games new approach, right, in selling. So if I call the vice president of sales, I wouldn't say, "Hi, my name is Ari. I offer the newest technique in selling and wanted to see if you'd be open to some new..." Right? I wouldn't go into a pitch about my solution. What I'd first do is define a problem I believe he might be having. In this case, usually vice president of sales has problems with sales teams or the salespeople chasing prospects who never have intention of buying at all. So my core problem that I'll begin the call with is, are you grappling with issues around your sales team chasing prospects with no intention to buy? So I'll refine the language for you in a minute, but again, I'll try to explain to you that you need to be able to convert your features and benefits into a core problem from the client perspective that they're having. Does this make sense so far, Ken?
Makes a lot of sense. And I'm wondering, too, is it usually a question that you're opening up, you know, the conversation with? Or is, because a lot of people, you know, they pitch you, right?
Yep.
It's just a statement.
Yep. Yeah, what happens is we've been trained classically to force, not force, but try and put a prospect and force them into a yes or a no on the first call.
Mm-hmm.
And that yes or no creates pressure on people. And a lot of the game essentially removes pressure from the selling process. So the way I'm going to you language out the problem statement is going to engage them in a way that does not shut you down. So my languaging in this example, and I'll get into it in a minute with everybody else, would be more about engaging them in a conversation about the problem, not asking them to have it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all refining the wording, but that's what I'll get into in a few minutes, but that's where it's all going. So at first it's a bit shocking for people because they're so used to using their confidence based upon their knowledge of the product as a way to have a conversation. What I'm trying to say today is you have to shift from talking about your solution to being able to talk about the problems that your solution solves for people on the first call.
Right, and you know, it just brings back old memories to me when I used to be a stockbroker. We'd pitch people, right? "Hi, this is Ken Foster. The reason I'm calling is I have a new municipal bond that just came out. It's yielding 10% interest. I'd like to know if you have an interest." Total turnoff to most people.
Right.
But that's the way we're pitched.
Yeah,
I'm interested now in getting into the dialogue with you. I'd like to see how we can re-dialogue this.
You got it. Yeah, well, I have one step right before that, but absolutely that's what's coming next. Number four is start with a dialogue, not a presentation. So this is the part where I want us to begin to think about the goal of the call. And the goal of the call is to create a two-way dialogue, not a one-way pitch, because a two-way dialogue engages people in a conversation, okay? And we're not going to set the person up for a yes or no. This approach is not designed as a technique or a trick to trick someone to buy something. This is designed to engage people in a natural conversation, as you would with a friend, so both of you can determine together if it's worth your time to pursue or not. So you can leave the call or pursue the call on both of your terms. So the key to think about in this point is to not make assumptions in your mind that you believe this prospect should buy what you have, right? Even if you have the profile of your ideal client who you believe could really use your services, if you mentally assume that in your mind before you make the call, they can pick that up a mile away. Even if you're genuine and honest, and that's the caveat to think about today, is you have to be very aware that you're not mentally assuming the sale before you call. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess what I'm getting, you know, we haven't got to the solution yet, but I'm hearing in your voice that it's about genuine sincerity, and you're saying sincerely don't be approaching it as you're going to sell this guy.
Well, because logically you don't know if they can buy it or not, right? You have no information about their decision-making process. You have no information about their budget. You know nothing. So by you assuming that you're going to sell them something on that first call, you are setting yourself up for a failure, and that's the whole problem with traditional selling. Let's get into it now with some of the languaging, okay, and what you say on these calls. So number five is open up the call, open your call with your core problem statement, okay? So hopefully a few of you thought about what problem you solve for people, and I'll use my own example here, but let's go take a step back and go into the first couple seconds of the call, okay? So the Lopagam approach teaches this approach. So when you call somebody, you wouldn't begin with, "Hi, my name is Ari, we offer you." There's no pitch happening here because it does not create dialogue, right? So what you'd begin with is this. You'd begin with, "Hi, my name is Ari. Maybe you can help me out for a moment." That's all I'm going to say. That's the first thing I'm going to say. Now, how would you say, or how would you respond, or how most people respond to a relaxed opening phrase like that, Ken?
I would say, "Well, what can I help you out with?"
That's fine.
I mean, that's the first thing that comes to my mind.
Sure.
I think for most people, you know, when somebody asks for help, we generally respond, "Well, how can I help you?"
That's right. It's a natural reaction that almost everybody responds. And this is not, again, this is truthful. I'm really looking for help because I have no idea if I can help them or not. That's why this all stems from honesty and truthfulness. That's why, you know, you're in a very good place to begin with. So they say back to you, "How can I help you?" Then what I'm going to do is I'm not going to give a pitch about what I have to offer. What I'm going to do is go right into the problem that I believe I can solve to see if this person has that. So here's the language I want to use next. "I'm just giving you a call to see if you folks are grappling," and the key word here is grappling, "with any issues around your sales team chasing prospects who never have any intention of buying."
Yeah.
Okay? So I'm stepping directly into their world in one phrase. I've given no pitch, no introduction, nothing about me. I begin the conversation diving right in to the person's world. Okay? And here's what usually happens. There's two directions at this point, right? What happens is they might say, "Well, who's this?" Which is completely expected. I'm not recommending you hide who you are. I'm suggesting offering it when it's appropriate in the conversation. And offering it too early on can create a problem, as you know, with traditional selling. So when they say to me, "Who might this be?" I'm going to say, this is Ari, and I'm from Lopagam, and I'm just calling, and guess what I'm not going to do right now?
I don't know who you are.
I'm not going to give a pitch about my solution.
Okay.
I'm going to go right back to the problem. I'm just giving you a call to see if you or your folks over there are grappling with issues around your sales team chasing prospects who just don't have the intention of buying. So now where's the ball at this point? Whose court is it in?
In their court.
That's right. So what I'm doing is I'm lowering the resistance as a way to do only one thing. Not to make the sale, it's premature, but to open the conversation and to develop enough trust to be viewed as a trusted advisor, not someone trying to push a solution. And that is the languaging that is used on those first calls. So traditional selling says call and ask a lot of questions to learn about someone's business. But the problem with that is that people don't like you fishing with questions about who they are, right?
That's right. Absolutely right. That's such a turn off. Yeah.
Right. That approach.
Who are you? Do you own a headset? Do you have a telephone number?
Exactly. How's your business going? Do you have any problems with it?
What are your sales? You know,
exactly.
Yeah, right.
So the onus is on you to be able to come up with the core problem you believe the majority of your clients have. If you don't know what that is, somebody go back to your previous clients and ask them. Ask them, what were the two or three core problems that you had before you bought our solution, and now what problems got away? And you'll be able to get it that way. Okay? So it's a different way of thinking, but if you can gather that data and use their language, you'll lower the resistance from the actual call. So that's the opening phrase. I'm sure for a lot of you it's a bit of a shock because you're used to giving a formal presentation, but you can go ahead and do that, but expect the wall picture.
You know, you can use the same pitch, too, when you're out there networking. I mean, I think this is a wonderful way, especially when you're meeting somebody new, to really open the door to meet and greet other people, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it can be working all kinds of areas.
You can use this in marketing. Yeah, in marketing, networking, in any way. I mean, someone called me the other day and said, you know, how can I use this in a networking meeting? And, you know, because what's happening, he sells insurance. So when people say, what do you do? He says, well, I offer life insurance, health insurance. I said to him, but what problems do you help people solve? And after a few minutes of conversation, he was able to come up with a phrase that said, well, what I do is I help people eliminate the risk that something happens in their life unexpectedly, they'll be financially distraught.
Mm.
I said, really? Now, that is powerful. That's what your core problem statement is going to be on every interaction with the first potential client.
That's a wonderful question just to ask when you meet somebody at a networking event. You know, I mean, for me it would be. You know, because a lot of times people stumble with what their product is or what they even do.
Yeah,
wonderful question. You know, what does your product solve?
You're going to find a lot of people struggling with
someone else. Go ahead.
A lot of people struggle with this concept because we are so used to and so ingrained in our mind to leverage the call based upon what we know about our solution.
Right.
And the problem with that has been so overly used and causes a rejection that you have to be able to step out of your own solution and convert it into a problem you can articulate using the language of the client. And that's what builds trust on the call, which is a missing link in the whole process of cold calling. So if you can understand the concept and use it, then you'll find very pleasant people willing to talk to you and without getting the pushback that you're used to. So that's number five. It's a big one, but it's the most important one to articulate because once you get it down, you'll never, ever go back again the old way because it's so much more pleasurable.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Number six is recognize and diffuse hidden pressures. Okay, so one of the few things you might have noticed as I began that call in this role play a few minutes ago, I'll mention a few things. One is, you did not hear a lot of enthusiasm from me on the first call, right? Because what's the risk of extending enthusiasm on the first call to a potential prospect? What can go through their mind?
Well, you know, my state happens to be really down in that moment, and you come in with some raw pitch, I guarantee you I'm not going to listen to you.
Right.
You know, so we're going to mismatch even on stage. So
right.
From my point of view.
Well, enthusiasm basically sends a message you're assuming that what you have is the right fit for the client.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes you back to step one again. That creates the problem. So you must be able to engage people in a natural conversation as if you're calling a friend, in a natural, calm voice with a relaxed, relaxed tone like myself, easygoing, because that elicits a response back. If you show enthusiasm, that triggers the immediate rejection that happens on the phone. And that's the whole reason behind the numbers game. That's where it came from. The numbers game concept came from someone calling someone else, triggering rejection, getting hung up on, and someone's boss saying, call somebody else. You see, so it's not about how many people you call. It's about what you say on the call and how you come across. And that's what Unlock the Game is now exploiting and taking advantage of to help people understand where they're hitting so much resistance. So, number six, recognize and diffuse hidden pressures. You're going to make this call, and you will get some resistance back only because people are so used to and so sensitive to any kind of outbound call. So I've come up with some methodologies around how you can begin to diffuse if you do get some resistance back from people. So if you do get a response like, oh, well, we already have a vendor for this problem. What's a typical response that most people respond to when the salesperson hears the response of, we already have a vendor? How are we trained to deal with objections typically?
Sometimes you'll say, okay, and you know, who do you know that may have the problem?
Right, so we need to divert off.
You know, divert off.
Or we try to overcome it, right?
Overcome the objection, of course.
Right? That's right.
So, you know, I understand that, but, you know, you don't know about my product because we have X, Y, Z.
That's right. So,
blah, blah, blah.
What happens is we jump back into selling mode again.
Right.
The moment we hear an objection. So that's traditional thinking, is overcome it, go past it. What I'm trying to say is the goal here is to diffuse any pressure left in the conversation, to reopen the conversation again, to allow the other person to hear or you to talk about what's happening. So in this example, and what I teach in my program is, when someone gives you an objection like, we already have a vendor, the first step is to fuse, and so what you might say is, that's not a problem. That's not a problem is always the way to diffuse the tension that might exist beneath the conversation, to respond with something to the effect of, that's not a problem. I'm not calling to replace who you currently have. I'm just calling to see if you'd be open. And the operative word here is open. Open to some different ideas based upon what you folks may not have right now.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to help people here open conversation, not get shut down. So this is not a technique to close the person to sell what you have. This is a way to use empathy to help the other person relax and not fear you, that you're not here to disrupt their lives. You're simply here to see if they'd be open to hearing some different ideas of what you have. That's a snapshot on what I teach, and I've actually outlined every objection in the materials on that. Number 7, which is the last one, which is determine a fit. Determine a fit and if a calendar relationship makes sense. Again, determine a fit and if a calendar relationship makes sense. And here's where I'm going with this. Let's assume the conversation goes well, okay? You have it in conversation, there's interplay back and forth, it's going pretty well, and the call is coming to an end, okay, to a natural conclusion. What do most people who sell do when they feel like the call is coming to an end? What do they try and do?
Well, a lot of times I think they start to panic.
Right.
I'm going to call, you know, come to an end.
Yeah.
What do they do? Well, you tell me.
Well, you're right. Mentally, we panic. We feel like we're going to lose the opportunity. What we try and do is close the person to an appointment. We try and book an appointment, which unfortunately puts pressure on the other person. We close it based upon the need we hear. And so what I'm suggesting is, there's one more component you're going to have to determine on the first call. Even if you get a need, you're going to have to ask a question around if the need is a priority to solve. And this is the step that most people miss on these calls, is they say, oh, great, he's got a need, which means he's interested. But what we don't ever ask is this need a top priority for you or your organization to solve? Or is it something that can go on the back burner for a while? And because some people have needs but don't have the time or budget to solve it, it's important for you to know, because you can be led down a long 6-month sales cycle by determining a need, but what you discover down the road is what? It's not a priority to solve. So that's the first component, to determine a fit between you and the other person. And the last element is, at the end of a call, you want to uncover the truth of where it stands. So rather than trying to book the appointments, what you're going to say is, first of all, where do you think we should go from here? Is a nice way to engage and elicit how the person is feeling or thinking, to really find out where they stand. And if you feel like there's some a connection here between the both of you, what you can do is offer what I've created, a concept that I call a calendar relationship. Mm-hmm. A calendar relationship. What that means is that you can bring up in a very gentle way that, and this is what I might suggest here is, let's say I'm talking to you, Ken, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If it comes to an end, it's a good call. What I might say is, you know, Ken, here's what I'm thinking. It might make sense if you and I circle back at a certain time and date to connect back together, to see where things are between the both of us. Again, this call is not to is not to pressure you or provide you with more information, but simply be available to you for a Q&A session. And it helps us avoid the whole chasing game with me chasing you down and you chasing me down. So it's what we call a calendar relationship. Would you be open to that idea?
Yeah, I'd be open to that.
So, you're easy, Ken.
Yeah.
So,
if it was put that way, I would be open to that.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, you know, you being genuine about that, because that's exactly what happens. If you deliver this in a way that shows you're trying to help the other person avoid the chasing game, and you let them know the next call is not designed to close them, you remove the pressure from the next call ahead of time, let them know the call is designed to help them figure out more questions about what you do, then you lower the resistance, remove the pressure, and what typically happens is if you do it right, the other person books the appointment with you.
Right.
It's amazing. So the whole lesson here is if you can learn how to remove the pressure from the initial cold call, you will find so much success, it'll really change the way you do business. And that's the whole idea behind offering these seven steps, Ken.
Well, you know, these steps are incredible, and I know you have so much more. I was just thinking, you know, if you apply these principles on even how people leave messages on answering machines, I guarantee you there's a lot of calls I don't return quickly just because of the way it's promoted. You know, it's all about them and what they want, what they need. It's like, you know, I'll delegate it to somebody else down the line, right?
Right.
You know, so and I know you've got a lot of techniques around all of this. So
yeah.
I'm really curious, and I know a lot of listeners are, they've got a lot of value so far, but I know you've got so much more to offer. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what do you have? How do we connect with you? How do we really, you know, they say that the repetition is the mother load of skill, man.
There you go.
You've got to repeat this stuff to learn it, because I've listened to you several times, and every time I get more and more and more. So.
Yep.
How do we connect with you? What do you have to offer here for us?
Well, first of all, you know, what I've given you is a framework, and I'm sure a lot of you can take what I've given you and use it tomorrow and probably find some success right away. But what you have to do is begin to rewind the tapes in your mind and be able to fill it back up with this kind of languaging. So there's two components you have to master here. One is this way of thinking, and the next thing is languaging, right? So you don't sound scripted. It must be natural. And what I've done is come up with an approach for every single aspect of the selling process, from voicemail to gatekeepers to the first call to proposals, all the way to the end in a very natural, comfortable way, so you stop chasing people and actually begin to build some really good business here. So I've taken all my content and packaged it into materials for people to actually use.